Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
The World, Atlas of Cheese by Nancy Erkoff's Stuka, 1976. Classic. If you're listening to this, you've probably heard some earlier episodes. I'm working my way through towards the end of the book, page 141, through the cheese recipes. Unfortunately, I wanted to read it in one fell swoop, but got interrupted by life, taking kids off to scouts and preparing dinner and stuff like that. So we're back here. Erkoff has taken us through the theory of cheese, the world of cheese, buying cheese, taking cheese home, and now you're going to cook with it using her recipes. So there's a sort of a logic to it all. And on page 214, it's only $3 on eBay if you want to buy this book. There's a beautiful 1970s pictures of this person with a piece of soup eating from himself with a soup hat on. It's just a bizarre picture. But we go to this, and I believe this is where I finished off. A leek and cheese soup, Dutch cheese soup. 3 eggs, 2 tablespoons of cream, 2 ounces of extra mature Gouda, 1½, 2 ounces of ham, finely chopped, chives, 3 cups of bouillon, I don't know what that is, some Dutch gin, and bread crouton, so Dutch gin, I don't know how you get that. And here's how you do it. Beat the eggs with the creamy mix and grated cheese, the finely chopped ham, and finally cut the chives. Bring the bouillon to the boil and pour onto the mixture while beating continuously. Serve in bowls accompanied by a glass of gin, which may be added to the soup. Croutons are served separately. That is ultrably, amazingly, insanely weird. Soup à l'oignon. It sounds like onion, but it's sure it's not. It's L'Oignon. Oignon. It is onions. 1 to 1¼ pounds of onions, 2 tablespoons of oil, 2 tablespoons of butter, 4 tablespoons of teaspoons of flour, 4 cups of strong beef bouillon, which means is sort of like stock, I suppose we'd call it. Imagine that, salt and pepper. For the croutons, 4 slices of bread, 1½ ounces of grated Gruyere or Parmesan cheese. Slice the onion, saute the oil and butter until the slices are glazed and golden brown. Turn them over occasionally, sprinkle flour over the onion and fry for a few more minutes. Then pour the bouillon over little by little. Allow the soup to simmer for 20 minutes. Remove the excess fat, finish off the salt and pepper taste. Croutons are either, it's just eating stock. Okay, tartlets au Roquefort. This is on the next page. This looks a bit more, can I say that food photography has come a huge way? This would be, this looks like a pile of sick. Right, tartlets au Roquefort, prepared in the famous sheep milk cheese, decorated with walnuts. It really looks disgusting. Just food photography has come a long way since 1976. 3½ ounces of Roquefort, 1 ounce of walnuts, cognac, 1 egg yolk, about a tablespoon of cream, tartlets, tart shells, and parsley. Rub the Roquefort through a sieve. Serve 2 walnuts and chop up the rest into small pieces. Blend the Roquefort with chopped nuts and a dash of cognac. The egg yolk and enough cream so the cream cheese mixture is formed. Fill the tartlets and bake them for 15 minutes in an oven preheated to 375 degrees until they're golden brown. Garnish with bits of walnut and parsley. They can all be served unbaked with an aperitif as a cold starter. Tartlets must then be much smaller and the egg yolk may be omitted. The tartlets can be bought ready-made, as we would nowadays. Look, if I can say, you'd have to be in the 70s to appreciate that. Provolone à la pâte. 7 ounces of provolone, 16 to 18 ounces of tomatoes, salt, pepper, 1 trefoil of garlic, garlic powder, oregano, chopped parsley. Never get the salt. Lay 3/4 inch thick slices of provolone and aluminium foil on a baking tray. Peel the tomatoes, remove the core, and cut the core of tomatoes. Cut the pulp into very small pieces, blend it with salt and herbs to taste. Put some mixture, this mixture, on slices of cheese and place under a grill or on the top of a preheated to 375 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit until the cheese begins to melt a little. Cut into pieces. This is a delicious snack to have as an aperitif. The piece de resistance in most dinner is a good piece of meat, and many meats are very heavily combined with cheese. Steak grilled with a slice of cheese, veal with creamy spread of butter, and roquefort mix, cutlets filled with ham and cheese, ragu sprinkled with grated cheese, tongue of veal with rich sauce monnaie, etc. There are endless possibilities. We give the recipes for a few more famous dishes, followed by a cheese souffle, some vegetables prepared with cheese, a few interesting ways to prepare faithful potatoes, so often neglected in cooking. What I do have to mention at this stage is my awesome discovery about the contents of McDonald's cheeseburger. That is anything but cheese. There are just so many list of additives. If you can look at what the ingredients of that, some dark orange slab that they put in a Big Mac. When you read into it, there's anything but cheese. There's so many other additives in it. It's pretty amazing. I might set it as a exam question before it was cancelled. That is to analyse the percentage of what in a McDonald's hamburger. Kasbrücken, Kempczinki. Salt. Let's see. You need salt. Then 4 veal steaks, 4 tablespoons of butter, 1.5 to 2 ounces of mushrooms, 2 onions, 4 tablespoons of flour, 1 cup of bouillon, B-O-U-I-L-L-O-N, 1/2 cup of cream, pepper, celery salt, basil, 1.5 to 2 ounces of extra mature cheese, sweet red pepper, or tomato. Salt the steaks and fry them. Now, this is an interesting thing because this is something we've recently rediscovered, the salted steaks. Fry them, we call it Popstorm steak because it tastes so salty. Fry them in a third of the butter on the side until golden brown and place them in a flat, heatproof dish. Wash the mushrooms and cut them in slices, i.e. they've been grown in poo. Chop the onions until fine and saute them with mushrooms for 5 minutes in half the remaining butter. Salt the pepper to the taste and divide the mixture over steaks. Melt the rest of the butter in the same pan and fry and dry flour and bouillon little by little, stirring continuously until smoothly bound sauce is found. Add a cream and herbs. Pour the sauce over mushroom onion mixture, sprinkle grated cheese over it, and place the dish in the middle of an oven preheated to 370 degrees Fahrenheit for 30 minutes. Garnish with strips of red pepper and tomato. You've got to remember that microwaves didn't exist at this point in time, and all the appliances. Okay, that sounds like okay. Carry the pork from a 6 serving salt. Obviously salt, pepper, 2.25 pounds of curry of pork with the ribs. I don't know what curry of pork is with the ribs. 6 tablespoons of butter, 8 to 10 ounces of mature cheese. Fry the salted and peppered meat in butter for about 40 minutes until golden brown and done. Cut the meat between the ribs almost to the end. Place a thick slice of cheese in each groove and allow it to stick out quarter to half above the meat. Then place the meat in the center of a preheated oven from 40 to 425 degrees Fahrenheit until the cheese is melted after about 15 minutes. Before serving, place a paper cuff around each rib. So can I have a picture of it? I sort of can imagine that. Okay, cheese souffle. My glasses are a bit dirty here, so it's a bit hard reading. Butter. 4 tablespoons of butter. Now this is interesting, it's TSP, there's a small t, which is correct now. 4 TSP of flour. 1.25 cups of milk. Salt, pepper, paprika, Worcestershire sauce, Tabasco, thyme, 3 eggs separated. 1.5 to 2 ounces of extra mature cheese. 1.5 to 2 ounces of ham. 2 tablespoons of Madeira butter. She really is a real soak. Some of these 70s pictures are just too middle-lighted. They are just so absolutely weird, like Monty Python. Melt the butter and add the flour, and very slowly add the milk, stirring gently until smooth sauce is obtained. Mix in the herbs and spices, stir in the warm sauce through the beaten egg yolks, put everything back in the pan, and mix in the grated cheese and diced ham. Finally, stir in the Madeira and finish off to taste. Beat the egg whites until stiff and fold them quickly and carefully. Sauté, transfer the mixture to a butterproof dish, capacity of 1 quart. Whatever that is. Fill the dish with no more than 2/3 and place in the bottom of an oven. Preheated to 375 degrees for about 30 minutes until done and golden brown. Place the lid next to the dish in the oven. When ready, cover the hot lid and serve immediately. Okay, that sort of makes sense. A souffle. So this is the sort of thing that's for sprays. Fonds du artichauts à gratin. I suppose it would be artichokes in here. 3.5 ounces of bacon, 7 ounces of mushrooms, 2 tablespoons of butter, 4 artichoke bottoms, 1/2 cup of Mornay sauce, salt, pepper, rosemary, 1.5 to 2 ounces of Gruyere and paprika. Fry the bacon to crisp and golden brown. Pour off the excess fat. Wash the mushrooms and sauté them with butter for only a few minutes only. Cut the bacon and mushrooms into small pieces and stir them into the Mornay sauce. Add the salt, pepper and rosemary to taste. Place the artichoke bottoms into the ovenproof dish. Pour the sauce over them. Sprinkle on grated cheese. Put the dish in the middle of the oven, preheated to 350 to 375 degrees Fahrenheit for about 20 minutes. Scatter with paprika before serving. Okay, well, this is weird as... And I should mention that the only purpose of this, me reading this, is perhaps I don't really expect anyone ever to go out and cook a 70s dish. There might be curiosity. It's just the cognitive rehab, me reading different words and reading it quickly. Propoletti di spinaci alla ricotta. 16 to 18 ounces of spinach, 8 to 9 ounces of ricotta, 4 tablespoons of flour. Now that's capital TBS. I don't know why she's got pepper, 3 egg yolks, 3.5 ounces of grated parmesan cheese, 1/4 cup of butter. Boil washed spinach for 5 minutes, allow to drain thoroughly and chop until fine. Mix in the ricotta, flour, salt, pepper, egg yolks and 1/2 the grated cheese and form into a small balls. Slide them one by one carefully into the pan and almost boiling water and simmer to 3 to 4 minutes. Remove them from the pan with a slotted spoon and place them in a heated dish. Dab with a little butter and sprinkle on the rest of the cheese thickly. Stuffed potatoes. This is something we do. Stuff 6 large potatoes, 1/2 cup of milk, 1/2 ounce of cheddar cheese, Cheshire Stilton salt, pepper, seasoned salt. Oh dear, if the salt's not enough. 1.5 to 2 ounces of grated cheese, 1/2 cup of butter and parsley. So we do this, but we just have a potato and just put some cheese in it. We don't do any of this. Brush the potatoes and clean. Wrap them in aluminium foil and bake them in the center of the oven, preheated to 375 degrees Fahrenheit for about 1 hour until done. Cut off the end of each potato and hollow them out carefully. Oh. Mash the contents and blend with milk, diced cheese, salts and herbs. Fill the potatoes with mixture, scatter the grated cheese over them, dab them with butter, and put them next to each other in an oven-proof dish for another 20 minutes approximately until golden crust is formed. Garnish with sweet of parsley before serving. So we just cook with the potato, cut in half, and put cheese in the centre of it. I don't understand what that is. That would be a very rich... I don't know what that is in terms of potato. Okay. Emmentaler rosti. 2 onions, 2 tablespoons of butter, 1.5 to 1.5 pounds of potatoes, salt, pepper, 1.5 ounces of Emmental. Quite honestly, we would use a thing of salt a year now. Saute the finely chopped, we have probably salt in all our food anyway. Saute the finely chopped onions in 1/2 the butter until golden brown. Peel the potatoes, grate them coarsely, and scatter the salt and pepper over them. Add the grated potato to the onion in the frying pan, press it down with the center of the spoon and fry them with a medium flame for about 20 minutes. Turn the cake as soon as the underside is golden brown and top is glazed. To do this, allow it to glide on the board. Put the rest of the butter into the frying pan and fry the other side of the rosti until golden brown. Place the slices of cheese on top and put under the grill until the cheese melts and is golden brown. The only thing I don't quite understand is what they mean by rosti. Well, I suppose that the rosti is the actual thing. Now here we've got something using quark. Which Australians don't have. If you said to an Australian what quark is, we would not understand. Steak sauce: 1.5 ounces of quark, 5 tablespoons of milk, 1 teaspoon of mustard, 1 tablespoon of horseradish paste, 1 tablespoon of orange marinade, salt, pepper, of course, salt. Serve the quark with the milk and carefully mix the horseradish, rum, and orange marmalade, seasoned with salt and pepper to taste. That's it. The sauce. Mornay sauce. 1 tablespoon of butter, 1 tablespoon of flour, 1 cup of bouillon, 1 egg yolk, 1/2 cup of cream, glazed hard cheese, salt. Well, I don't think we add egg to our mornay. Melt the butter, sprinkle with the flour and the bouillon little by little, stirring in continuously. I think this is stock, what I mean by bouillon. B-O-U-I-L-L-O-M. Beat up the egg yolk with the cream and mix through the sauce. Then add grated cheese and finish off with salt and pepper to taste. Okay, so this is one thing I really don't know. I'll eventually look up if I can remember. Desserts. To conclude the meal, nothing is better than... Oh, I must admit, last night was watching Sound of Music. What was the position of the Austrians in the First World... The Austro-Hungarians in the First World War. And I asked, and I totally forgot, and I went back and read it. It was so fascinating to see how big the Austro-Hungarian Empire was, and it was really just 3 countries before World War I. But, you know, it's just Germany, Austro-Hungary, France, I suppose Britain, and Russia. They were just really agglomerated into these huge, massive empires, and that the Hungarians and Austrians, their war stopped on the 3rd of November. They got out a few days early. Desserts. To conclude the meal, nothing better than cheese. Of course, just one well-chosen cheese you may all need. Think of a fresh, white, sourish little goat cheese accompanied by unsweetened whipped cream. A rare delight to follow, perhaps. A rather heavy dish of venison or a mighty steak. I don't think we eat venison now. We don't eat mutton or anything. Cheese and fruit are often appropriate if seldom tried in combination. Cheddar with apple, cherries and melons, pears, Emmental with grapes, apples, peach and pineapple, blue cheese with apple, pear, blue grapes, and many combinations are possible. I don't think we have blue grapes. I think that would mean... We have red grapes, red and green grapes. But we will go, not go into the cheese board at such a point. There is a separate section of cheese and wine later in the book. We're allowed to take a look at some other cheese desserts for which we round off a meal. First of all, there are the fromages cardinal, a mixture of 4 famous cheeses, which the purist may sound a little profane, but it's very good to eat. And it saves you the trouble of making up your mind which cheese is best. Fromage or cardinal, this surely must be the last one. Surely. Oh no, it goes on. Can't you? Bloody well, shut up. Oh no, I love you. Nancy, fromage du canal. 2.5 ounces of Gruyere, 3.5 ounces of Camembert, 3.5 ounces of Bleu de Braise, and 7 ounces of Petit Suisse and Paprika. Aye, pushing Switzerland. Grate the Gruyere, beat the electric mixer. The Gruyère, Camembert and Bleu into a smooth mass. Add the Petit Suisse, reserving a little of this, and beat again for 3 minutes. Place this mass in a bowl so it sticks out over the top. Cover with foil and put in the refrigerator for a few hours. Smooth the top with a remaining Petit Suisse. Sprinkle some paprika on top and serve with hard rolls of French bread. This is... What? That's a just... Is that a cheese recipe? I don't know, that just sounds like a whole lot of cheese we see them. A similar recipe is the following. Mousse au fromage. It should not be followed by sweet dessert unless ice cream or fruits. In fact, mousse combines very well with fruits, as the recipe will show. It can be served as a cold entree, a tomato or green pepper filled with a mixture and sliced, when ice cold, looks the most appealing, tastes very, very good. And here's the thing. Moussa fromage, 7 ounces of blue cheese, 3.5 ounces of cream cheese, 1 tablespoon of Worcestershire sauce, 1.5 tablespoons of powdered gelatine, 2 tablespoons of water, 1 cup of whipping cream. My God, that just sounds disastrous. Set the blue cheese and blend with the cream cheese and Worcestershire sauce in a mixer. Blend the gelatin with the water, dissolve over a double boiler and stir through the cheese mixture. Whip up the cream until stiff, fold it carefully through the cheese. Transfer the mousse to a battered wing mold and put the cold place to set. Turn out the mold and garnish with blue grapes. Alternatively, you may fill the centre of the ring with fresh fruit salad. God, surely... this is the last 2 pages. There are more delicacies to end your meal. Pancakes or pasha, a Russian specialty of Easter. And try the delicious sweet cream cheese tart or quark tart made with fresh cheese, which you do not need an oven at all. Not only are these recipes great for desserts, they are delicious with a cup of coffee and tea at any hour of the day. Cream cheese pancakes. 8 to 9 ounces of cream cheese, cottage cheese or fromage free, 2 tablespoons of flour, 3 eggs, salt, of course, 2 tablespoons of sugar and butter. If you use cottage cheese, push it through a sieve first and mix the cheese with the remaining ingredients, model the mass into flax cakes and fry them in a frying pan. Sprinkle them with confectioner's sugar and serve them with strawberry jam or fruit compote. Something called pasha. 8 servings, 4 ounces of extra fresh cheese. I suppose extra fat, fresh cheese. What? You can buy some extra fat cheese. 1/4 cup of butter, 1/4 cup of sugar, 1/4 cup of almonds. Oh, there's gonna be salt in here. No, there's no salt. 3.5 ounces of seedless raisins, 1/4 cup of candied orange peel. 1/4 cup of sour cream, fruit sauté or cream. You really need to disturb this with the defibrillator or statins. Sieve the cheese, which must be very dry as possible. Cream the butter with the sugar until soft. Mix in ground almonds, raisin, chopped candied orange peel, sour cream and cheese. Cover with a tall mould. A very well cleaned flower pot will do. With a muslin cloth. Place the mixture in and fold over the corners of the cloth. Put something heavy on top and put the pasha in a cool place for 12 hours. Then turn it out and serve it in fruit sauce and cream. Oh, quark tart for pastry. 7 ounces of dry cookies or graham crackers. Does anyone know what graham crackers are? I've never heard. That sounds a real 1970s thing. Be the sort of things that I'll be expected to find in the supermarket. Get the graham crackers and no one would know. It'd be parts of it. 2 tablespoons of runs, 3 tablespoons of red jam for the filling, 3 eggs separated, 7 ounces of caster sugar, 16 to 18 ounces of quark. Now remember, quark is this thing which we don't know about. 2 lemons, 8 tablespoons of gelatin, 1 32-ounce can of peaches, because you wouldn't have fresh peaches. Line a 9-inch spring mould with transparent foil, whatever that means. Break the crackers into small pieces, mix these with jam thinned with rum. Now place this mixture at the bottom of the spring mould, beat the egg yolks with the sugar while white, until white and foamy. Beat the egg yolks with the sugar until... I don't think you can make yolks white. Okay. She surely means the egg whites with the sugar. Mm. Okay, I suppose that makes sense. Stir the cheese and grated rind, both lemons, into the mixture little by little. Warm the juice from both lemons until it steams. Remove from the heat. Dissolve the gelatin, which has been soaked in plenty of cold water and well wrung out, in the warm juice to the quark mixture. Cut half of the drained fruit into small pieces and fold these pieces into the cheese mixture with very stiffly whipped egg whites. Fill with a swing mold with this garnish and top the rest of the fruit. Allow the cake to set in a cold place for 24 hours. The fresh quark tart, a quark tart, can be made without using an oven, particularly is it good for a light dessert. Cream cheese tart. For the pastry, a third of a cup of butter, two-thirds of a cup of flour, half a tablespoon of salt, 2-3 tablespoons of water. For the filling, half a cup of sugar, juice of 1 lemon, salt, a cup of flour, 8 ounces of cream cheese, 2 eggs, 1/4 cup of milk. For the topping, 1 egg, a tablespoon of sugar. Make the pie dough, see cheese pie, and line the batter pie tin with it. Mix with sugar, lemon, salt, flour with cream cheese using an electric mixer. When the mass is smooth, mix the eggs one by one and then the milk, whipping well. Fill the tin with 2/3 of the mixture, bake for 40 minutes in the center of an oven and preheat it to 425 degrees Fahrenheit. Brush with eggs, which have been beaten up with the sugar, and place the tart in the oven for a little longer. We've kept until last what is no doubt the most famous cheese meal of all, the fondue, invented in Sweden by the Swiss Sen, that's cheese expert, S-E-N-N-E, living high up in the Alpine meadows. I think whatever they are with Sen, S-E-N-N-E, I don't know what they are, living high up in the Alpine meadows in the solitude of the mountains. This dish was originally eaten as a primitive fashion from one communal pan. Modern fondue has inherited these ancient traditions of Switzerland. It's not a daily meal, but a festive one to enjoy with old friends. The hostess prepares the fondue at the table, and she takes care that everybody's happily gathered around and enjoys the age-old cheese dish. There must be ample quantity of cut French loaves on the table so that everyone can dip pieces of bread in the fondue using long fondue forks. These forks are slowly twisted to cut the cheese thread and slowly lift to the mouth. Don't be in a hurry, you'll enjoy the glorious flavour better, and you won't burn your tongue. Herdsmen and farmers practice the fundamental skills of humanity. They represent all that is lacking in cultured man, especially the city dweller. Perhaps this hankering of the lost things is the reason why many people like the sense of friendship and the joy of life is present in fondue. Oh God. Fondue noche. Neuchâteloise. 1 clove of garlic, 1 cup of dry white wine, 10 to 11 ounces of Emmental, 10 to 11 ounces of Gruyere, a tablespoon of corn flour, kirsch, nutmeg, and pepper. Roll the fondue pan with a clove of garlic. Pour in the wine and stir in grated cheese. Continue to stir until the cheese is melted and the sauce is smooth. As soon as the mixture starts to boil, thicken the corn flour mixed with a bit of wine. Add the kirsch, well, I don't know what that is, milk and pepper taste. Leave the fondue to simmer gently as the fondue stands. Serve white wine or tea as a break. A glass of kirsch can be served. So kirsch is some sort of, something we Aussies don't know what. K-I-R-S-C-H. I suppose I'd be slapped in the head for not knowing what an alcoholic drink is. In the French, in which French is neatly called coup de milieu. Fondue Fribourg. Place the milk or water in the fondue pan. Rubbing with garlic is not necessary. Cut the cheese in pieces, place them in a pan and press them in a fine fork. Continue stirring. When the mix is smooth, do not let it come to a boil. If it becomes too thick, add a few spoonfuls of warm water. Season with freshly ground pepper. The mix can take quite a lot without becoming sharp. Serve with tea. In Fribourg, the fondue is often spooned onto boiled potatoes. I was going to say spoiled potatoes. Okay, rachelette. A typical dish of Valais, rachelette has the same function as the fondue. The semi-soft, full cream rachelette cheese is halved, the rinds at the cutting surface is removed, and the cutting surface is exposed to a brightly burning wood or charcoal fire, with the heat of an electric rachelette device. So, the rachelette is a device. This is such a 70s bitch as you cannot believe it. In the meantime, the guests are kept busy. They peel potatoes that they have been cooked in their jackets and put gherkins and silver onions on their plates. As soon as the cutting surface of the cheese liquefies, the edges become golden. The host
Orhosses scrapes the half-melted cheese and the crisp edge onto one of the plates. The guests, therefore, do not all eat together, because Orhosses must be eaten hot and each takes his or her turn. The pleasant fare, the smell of melted cheese, the contrast between hot Rochelet and the cool fondant wine create a very special atmosphere. That was you. You were living in some sort of fantasy LSD land. Cheese and wine. Look, I'll just read the start of this, but I'm just so not into wine. I really don't know. It's all, I can tell you, white and red, and possibly what a port is. Cheese and wine. I'm going to read a little section of it, and then I'm not going to go right into the all thousands of different ones. We may wonder why it is wine has long been considered the true and perfect partner of cheese. One reason is that cheese on the palate seems to require a foil. By choosing wine, we provide a contrast, which at the same time complementary, we can prove this to ourselves by judicious comparison and by tasting. The harmony of cheese and wine cannot easily be achieved with other beverages. The taste of cheese is not generally improved by coffee, neither enhanced by tea, although Swiss prefer to serve tea instead of wine with their favourite fondue. Beer is a better choice as a partner of cheese. It's often preferred in countries that do not produce wine. Beer and cheddar cheese is an established tradition in England, while Norway and the pungent Gammelost is well tempered by the local brews. And remember, Ost is the Norwegian for cheese. Since they are so closely allied in origin, it might seem logical to partner cheese with a glass of milk. But the assertive flour and the clinging texture of many cheeses are neither resolved or enhanced by milk, nor for milk is too similar. We might be forced to conclude that alcohol is at the heart of the matter. Were it not for the fact that whiskey and gin are decidedly unsympathetic to cheese, we are left with wine, with its fruity, earthy, aromatic, benign, and often heady qualities. These are ideal companions to the specialty qualities of cheese. Yet even here we must exercise a certain amount of selection and judgment, for there is almost many varieties of cheese as there are wine, although some eccentric taste might suggest combining peppery cheese with sweet wine. We might begin with a simple rule. The wine that accompanies most types of cheese should not be sweet. There are one or two exceptions, however. Connoisseurs usually insist Stilton cheese be served with a port wine, which, though heady for its strong, is decidedly sweet. The reason for the survival of this partnership is because port is a gentleman's after-dinner drink of the 18th century England, and since cheese was served at the end of the meal, it was naturally found port as its partner. Port was an aristocratic wine, Stilton an aristocratic cheese. Others may point out the ideal partner to Stilton cheese is a fruity Burgundy, such as Nuits Saint-Georges, and who would say that they're wrong? I would. Bloody stupid man. The rules that govern the selection of wines accompanying the cheese should be regarded more as suggestions than strict guidelines. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Nancy. I won't actually go up and chastise people. It's generally acknowledged that wine and cheese of the same general character prove the most successful partner. A fresh, slightly, I think we're going to be spared this. Oh, we're going to be spared. I can actually read this. I don't want to go through. Slightly sour cheese is suited to a dry, light white wine. Cambouchou, the goat's milk cheese from Peru, France, is a good combination with a crisp white wine from Sancre or Muscadet from the Loire. Strong aromatic cheese demand a strong, robust wine. Provolone, for example, a pretty wonderful cheese, needs a wine that can look straight in the eye, and a wine like Barolo. Many combinations of wine and cheese are thus closely related in region of origin. A really earthy and tangy cheese, a blue such as Roquefort, demands a hearty red wine, and we do not have to look far to look. The vineyards of Châteauneuf-du-Pape, a mere 70 miles from the east of Roquefort village, produce the perfect partner, equally earthy and tangy. On the cheese farms of Alsace, the strongly aromatic Muster cheese is balanced by serving it with a spicy white local Gewürztraminer. In the trattorias of Piedmont, blue-veined Gangozzola is best suited to a warm-blooded Barolo or Barbaresco. I'm sure if you said these wines nowadays, they would go, what the heck, where are you from? In the same way, a Rubicon goes well with the light white wines of the Savoie, such as the Rosette. Emmental with the delicate Fernet wines from the Swiss Canton of Valais, and Parmesan with the red Sangiovese and the Ambrosco from Emilia. Combining cheese and wine with the same region is a good first principle, but it's not invariable. Bearing in mind that we have said about sweet wines, it would be a pity to serve fine Biernickles Hock with a piece of Limburger. And when in doubt, the rule is of like character should be applied. The rule is also useful with cheeses produced by countries that do not have make wine. Countries like Holland, Belgium, England, Scandinavian nations. England Blue Cheshire has a slightly tang that might go best with Sauvignon Blanc from Bordeaux. Mature Dutch Gouda is splendid with the wines of Mayoc. While many of the Scandinavian cheeses can be partnered with dry wines like Chablis. The quality of wine must also be considered when choosing cheese. If you stumbled across a treasure trove or a Richelbourg, that Ambossel wine from the Cote Nuits in Burgundy, or you have been saving a few bottles of Haut-Brion for a special occasion, you are unlikely to serve them with cheeses like Limburger or Romager cheese that you can recognize even before you see them, because you can smell them. Romander and Belgium's most famous stinky cheese. Romander, Belgium's most famous stinky cheese, needs a rough and ready Chantilly to keep it in place. Do you like this? You got to tame that cheese. And that's it. The stinky cheese is Romander. On the other hand, a cheese wine does not have to have a cost a fortune. A good piece of advice is to aim for simplicity, particularly when unfamiliar ground. A large selection of cheese and wines is pleasing only to the expert. To the uninitiated, it merely leads to confusion. Serving cheese with wine. Someone once said that the first duty of a wine is that it should be red. To this, we might add the second duty is to accompany food. There are some fruity and very distinctive wines that can be enjoyed by themselves. From the Moselle or Rhine, for example, most reds are best drunk with food, for it is food that somehow gives added dimension to their flavour. As food, cheese is particularly gifted at this task. She is such a fantastic writer, Urquhart. I was not going to read the wine stuff, I thought it was going to be too hard. One of the most acceptable moments to serve cheese and wine is at the end of a good meal. In most European countries, it's usually before the dessert, when a few different types of cheese are placed on the table and enjoyed with remaining red wine. In France, cheese is an inseparable part of dinner. In keeping with this simple approach, the cheese board on a dinner table should be offered a limited selection of types. For one thing, appetites are somewhat flagging by the time cheese is presented. There should be sufficient portion of each type, at 3.5 ounces per person. A list of possible combinations can be found on page 221. Which is, that combination probably is too much for me. The popularity of wine and cheese party as a social occasion has increased with the availability of staple ingredients. You could, if you felt sufficiently confident, offer just one cheese, such as a whole cheddar, Stilton or Gruyere, with a variety of wines to choose from. The combination of wine and cheese should be supported by additional elements, bread, assortment of salad things, a few condiments, while the French will always choose bread first and foremost. Other nationalities might prefer crackers and crispies. Scandinavia and Germany have a great selection of rye, black breads, crispies, well suited to the kind of cheese they produce. Some sophisticated Italians claim this is vulgar to eat, grana or a table cheese, but you might well discover the joy of a piece of fresh Parmesan accompanied not by bread but by crispy celery, a few radishes, of course, a glass or two of fruity Lambrusco. Make an experiment and decide whether Canavie cheese goes best with crusty French baguette or a slice of pumpkin, and whether Dutch Turbo with caraway seeds should be accompanied by sour rye bread or slices of chalar, a braided loaf found in Jewish cookery. English farmhouse cheddar seems designed to be a lifelong partner to farmhouse bread. It goes equally well with water biscuits, an early corruption of the word wafer biscuits. Aha! or this is called folk etymology, no etymology, or elegant crisp crackers known as Baths Olivers. Okay, so she's saying, look, seek a little wine, but you can experiment what the type of bread you eat with it. With your cheeses and wines, there should be a imaginative selection of breads, crackers, including fresh, crusty bread, brown bread, granary bread, rye, crackling broad toast, and assortment of wafers and crackers. Some people disapprove of butter with bread and cheese. Nevertheless, it should be included in those. And there are many who prefer it. Not anymore, sunshine. There should also be a cheese nice plates, napkins, salts, fruit such as grapes, apples, pears. For this goes extremely well with cheese. The quantity of wine needed must be calculated in relation to the possible thirst of the drinking habits of the party. If you are serving light wine and rosé wines during summer, thirst may be considerable, and for this reason it's a good idea to include beer, ice, water, fruit juices in your selection of drinks. But your first consideration is the wine, and it should count on about 3/4 of a bottle per person, and 3 bottles shared between 4 people. Oh, yeah, or... In wine-drinking countries, those with familiar with wine, it is customary to serve wines in order of importance. The light and modest ones first, leading up to the grand climax. A host serving claret or bordeaux might begin with a few bottles of Cru Bourgeois wine, fairly expensive, though something such as Chateau Thierry, a more classy Pulac wine, and terminate, if you can afford, with something really grand like Chateau du Guillaume, or whatever that is. It's equal to present wines in some semblance of an order at a wine and cheese party unless you are prepared to guide your guests through the selection. You can put all your wines on the table at once, or perhaps start with some light wines and bring on the guns lighter. Can I say, at a student party, you'd be just absolutely hopeless. When all is said and done, it's an individual taste, your taste, that's the most important thing to choose. Yeah, I've given you a huge amount of things, but it's up to you. Now, I'm saying that first, she says at the last. Take a mature Pour Le Vieux and try it with a glass of full-bodied Burgundy. If you don't agree that this is an ideal combination, try these cheeses with a glass of claret, or a white Burgundy, or even a hock. It's sort of like, you're just going to get absolutely plastered. You soon find that this pleasant and pioneering fashion, the cheese is a true companion. It is the individual and not the cheese nor the wine that really decides the ideal match. So there's actually individual taste involved in it. Page 42. We'll go to make your own cheese. And this is where I thought Nancy had excelled herself by actually having a photograph of herself. But she's got a photograph of her mate. Of this Dutch woman making your own cheese. To make your own cheese, we should realize that every region where cheese is made has something special to offer, something that is not available to us. We do not have the right cultures for the masterly Rhine floor of Brie or Camembert, or the mysterious caves that make Roquefort so uniquely itself. We have no cows grazing on herb-scented mountain slopes, provide us with the Emmental with its watering eyes, nor do we have the expert fingers for modelling the bizarre shapes of pasta filata. Now, that's interesting that the Romans modelled it, and then later. The most of us live under completely different conditions from the conditions responsible for making each cheese, region by region. All over the world, so remarkably different. Conditions of landscape, climate, and type of animals, all of which contribute to the cheese individuality. Nevertheless, with a few hints, we can all of this into account can be useful. In the chapter about the principles of cheese making, you can see how cheese is made by first curdling milk. As a rennet is often difficult to come by, we will start with simple recipes which are based on sour milk and do not need rennet. As in the recipe section, standard American measurements, etc. Okay, which is my other same. Fresh cheese or quark. So that's what that is. Cover a quart of raw milk, mix with a cup of sour milk or buttermilk or 2 tablespoons of yogurt and place it in a warm pot until it becomes thick. This should happen within 2 or 3 days. Put the mass in a thin cloth, e.g. a cheesecloth, tie it up and hang it for about... we've got cheesecloth, this is interesting. This cheesecloth has got the large holes in it to allow the whey to come through. The The curd is still too moist. Let it drain for another 6 to 8 hours. Okay, tie it up and hang it for 12 hours. It should then be solid, but not too dry and crumbly. Loosen the cloth, scoop the curd out, and sieve into a bowl and whip in smooth. Stir in whipped cream and finish the quark with salt to taste. It can be kept well covered and cool in this place for a couple of days. So that's what quark is. Quark is just off milk. Cottage cheese. Warm a quarter of milk with 4 to 6 tablespoons of lemon juice until it starts to flake. Continue heating on a low flame until the whey is lemon yellow, but do not allow it to boil. Put the mass into a thin cloth, e.g. clear cloth, and tie it up to hang. So again, this is interesting, so you separate with the whey. Which is the albumin, is why it's yellow. When the moisture is drained out sufficiently, put the curd in a bowl, stir the tablespoon of lemon juice in it, a teaspoonful of salt, and 1.5 tablespoons of cream. The cheese should have a granular structure and be firm to touch. This is just basic Scottish cheese. Kaish. Put a clean cloth in the strainer, pour in buttermilk, whatever that is. Lift the cloth out of the strainer. Which I think is buttermilk skim milk. I think buttermilk's more, got more butter in it, I think, in the strainer. Lift out the strainer by the four corners, tie it up and hang it to drain for at least 6 hours. 1/5 and 1/2 to 1/6 of its original volume will stay in the cloth. Put a clean cloth on the sieve or a small basket. Press the quiche out, let it drain for a few hours and turn it. This is an Asian nomad's cheese. It tastes less creamy than that of the preceding types of cheese because non-fat milk is used. So that's what buttermilk is, the milk that's been removed from butter. We call it skim milk. Crut. Warm up buttermilk, carefully stirring it with a rod until it starts to flake. With the genuine milk butter left from butter preparation. Well, there you go, that's what buttermilk is, what we call skim milk. With sour skimmed milk, well, there you go, particularly it is fresh, curdling will hardly appear. In that case, give it a hand by slowly letting drops of vinegar into it, but no more than 1 teaspoon per quarter of buttermilk. Put a strainer in a silver bowl, cover it with a thick layer of cloth, pour in the buttermilk. Put a cover of the strainer and let the buttermilk drain for about 2 hours. Knead salt to taste into it. Fold the cloth over the mass and lather packet on a dry cloth folded in four between two planks. Put a stone weight on the upper plank and press the cheese for about 6 hours. Now and then, wring the folded cloth. In South America, queso blanco is made particularly the same way from whole milk. Quark powder. What? Crumble a dry... What is quark again? It's fresh cheese. I just think it is. Keep the powder in a closed bottle or in the refrigerator or deep freeze. This powder can be used instead of fresh quark to make a savoury pastry. Since the powder keeps well, it is very handy to have in the kitchen. Recipe of the puff pastry is simplicity itself. Mix a half cup of flour, half a cup of butter, half a cup of quark powder, roll it into a paste onto a thin piece, fold up a few times, like that, can roll out and roll again. Yeah, I sort of know that this is like the making of croissant. After an hour's rest in a cool place, the paste can be shaped into any form that you like and baked. So that's quark powder to make a puff pastry. Gruyt. Bring buttermilk slowly to boil, stirring occasionally. Boil until about 1/3 or 1/4 of the original volume remains. The buttermilk discolors, becoming yellow ochre from the caramelization of the milk sugar. That's an interesting thing. Sieve the milk in the same way you described it, crut, and let it drain for an hour. Knead in some salt and let it drain for another 6 hours. Make a little ball shape and leave it to dry in the sun or warm over with 1/4 of milk. So this is just basically curdling milk. Beestings cheese. Oh, I don't know where you can beat that. Mix Beestings, colostrum milk, the first milk from a cow after it's calved, with a little salt and put it warm oven in an oven-proof dish until the milk is thick. The beefsteak cheese is white with a golden skin. Thank you. Rennet cheeses. Now some recipes for those who can get rennet. Now I think you can't get rennet in Australia because of people use it to make drugs. I was told. You might be able to obtain some from a cheesemaker or a cheese factory, or buy a bottle, a box of tablets, or rennet powder from a specialist supplier. You can't buy it from supermarkets for that reason. I was told it may have been a crazy reason. Iran pot cheese. To make 3 to 2.5 pounds of cheese, you need 10 quarts of milk, just under 1/2 cup of buttermilk, or yogurt, 1/4 cup of teaspoon of rennet, about 5 ounces of salt. Heat the milk to 86 degrees Fahrenheit, stir in the buttermilk and yogurt, and the rennet diluted with water through it. It is possible to keep the milk at the same temperature until it has been curdled, but put it in a clean cloth and hang it up by 4 corners to drain. Sprinkle salt on it. 10% of the curd weight is left in the cloth. Leave the curd for about 24 hours. Grind and mince it. Put the mass in a suitable high-sided stone jar. Press the curd well. Pour some brine on it. 3 to 3.5 ounces of salt to 1 quart of water. Close the jar carefully with an aluminium foil and leave for 3 to 4 months in a cool cellar at a maximum of 64 degrees Celsius, Fahrenheit, not possible in Australia. Make sure the cheese remains immersed in brine, top up if necessary. Can you imagine? What? This is the pot cheese. Oh. Fresh goat cheese. Now, in the evening, warm up the goat's milk to 75 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, there's all these pictures of this Dutch, heavily set Dutch woman. She'd punch you for 6 if you got the wrong side of it. She's wearing these amazing shoes. Add 8 ounces of fresh butter milk per quart, 2 drops of rennet diluted in 8 ounces of water. Stir well, keep gently on 3 minutes. Put in the pan covered in a hay box and a large basket with a paper between the pan and basket to prevent the milk cooling. Examine the milk in the next one to see if the milk has curdled. There should be some whey on top of the curdled mass. 12 hours after the addition of rennet, the curd should be put in a cheesecloth and allowed to drain for 6 to 12 hours at room temperature, about 68 degrees Fahrenheit. Mix the dry curd and some kitchen salt and put in small molds. Carefully clean the flour pots, earthenware, plastic, quite suitable. Press the curd well and remove all the air. Place it from the 4 hours in cool spot, 60 degrees Fahrenheit. Take the cheeses out of the molds and put them in a cool place on a cheesecloth and clean hay or straw, as you would have in the modern world. Turn them regularly, keeping the surface where they stand clean as possible. If they become too dry, wrap them in paper. So here's all the pictures of this woman doing this. Gouda cheese. To make one cheese, approximately 1 pound, you need 4.5 quarts of milk, 1/2 cup of buttermilk, 1/2 teaspoon of rennet, plus salt and white brine bath. For a brine bath, warm the fresh whole milk to 95 degrees Fahrenheit, add the buttermilk, the rennet, and stir for 3 minutes and wait until coagulation has taken place. This should happen in 1/2 hour's time. Cut the curd for 12 minutes into small cubes. The whey will separate and the curd will sink to the bottom of the vat. That's interesting because sometimes curd floats, sometimes it sinks. Run off as much whey as possible. Add 2 quarts of hot water to the curd and stir for 15 minutes. Again, run off as much whey as water as possible. Now you can put a thick packet of curd in a mold, taking care that it does not break into little bits. Press it in with your hands for a few minutes. Take it out again, wrap it in the cheesecloth and place it back into the mold. Put the lid fits inside the mold on top of it and apply a weight. After 10 minutes, turn the cheese and wring the cloth and apply greater pressure. Turn the cheese a few more times. After approximately 1.5 hours, it's ready. During processing, whey must be allowed to leave the mold. Yeah, okay. You're trying to get rid of the whey. Rest for a few hours before putting the brine bath for 14 to 16 hours. You can imagine, oh, I'm just going to make the cheese love. Okay. You need about 2 pounds of salt. Are you ready for this? For 11 quarts of water, the cheese should float in the brine. Finally, dry the cheese. So there you go. So the cheese has got sufficient fat left in it, now floats. So before, it was sinking away, which has got a lot of casein, but as you remove the casein protein, so whey has got fairly low density. Okay, so finally dry the cheese and store it in a cool place, and turn it daily for 4 to 5 weeks. And here she is in her thing. Mrs. Etty, the cheesemaker, is rightly proud of her cheese stored on the shelves in an upstairs room of the farmhouse. So she's Mrs. Etty from 1976. Fairly accomplished person. She's done her hair up and has got a lovely apron for it. Basic American cheese. It makes approximately 3 to 3.5 pounds of curds. You need 11 quarts of fresh whole milk, 3 cups of milk, a rennet tablet, and 3.5 ounces of salt. So there's no ripening or anything like this in this. Warm the milk to 18 degrees so it will just taste like bland bush. Stir the buttermilk, cover it, and let it stand for 1 hour. Why you'd be doing it, I don't understand. The temperature for remains constant at 88 degrees Fahrenheit. Add the rennet still for 1 minute, cover and wait for another 45 to 60 minutes. So you wouldn't get a license to sell this stuff in Australia because you couldn't pass the health instructions. The curd should have coagulated by now. Cut the mass of cubes measuring 3.5 to 1/2 inch. Stir the curd and whey for 10 to 15 to 20 minutes. Slowly heat over a period of 25 to 30 minutes at 160 degrees Fahrenheit. While stirring constantly, hold the curd at this temperature for 1 or more hours, all the time stirring 1 minute every 5 minutes. So obviously the curd, I think things agree. No, Fahrenheit, that's not it. That's really cold. When this has been done, you can pour the curd whey mixture into a strainer lined with cheesecloth. When the whey is drained, mix with salt, hang the cheese on cloth to help further drain. After a few hours, after the curd, transfer the curd in a vat, put the lid that fits inside the mold on top of it, and apply the weight. Some more whey will separate, and this should be allowed to run off. After this primitive pressing, you may dry the cheese at room temperature for several hours. Apply paraffin and age in a cool cellar or refrigerator. Of course, if you want to make your own cheese, I don't know whether this is the cheese I made earlier. To the cheesemaker. With all the recipes, do not expect to create a huge success the very first time. It's good fun, though, to try and try again. Do not hesitate to modify the recipe if need be. Quantity of milk, acidifying solution, or buttermilk, strength of rennet, etc. may vary as you should discover the best working method of your own personal circumstances. What a lucky that this is cheesemakers to the world. Okay, now this is the last page. Processed cheese. In the United States, I've asked people, what is processed cheese? We do have processed cheese, but it's singles in plastic. In the United States, processed cheese is identified as followed. Quote, pasteurized processed cheese is a dairy product resulting from the mixing and heating of several lots of natural cheese with a suitable emulsifying agent to homogenize us following its cooling. It contains fruits, vegetables, and meats. So what's interesting is to add something to the processed cheese so you can heat it up and the oil doesn't run off it. So if you heat it up cheese, cool it down, you get the cheese mass there and you get cheese oil rolling off it. In principle, the production is followed. The cheese is selected and often a combination of mild or full-flavored sorts depending on the type of processed cheese to produce. The cheese is slightly heated up to 21 degrees Celsius to facilitate the removal of rind like wax and plastic, etc. Grinding follows very carefully, particularly if the cheese was hard rind. Mixed ratio is then determined, the amount of emulsifying agent, water, possibly other additives like butter, whey powder. So whey powder would be the dried album. So if you get the whey protein with album, which is that disulfide, 4-disulfide binds. Herbs, spices, bits of ham, sausage, etc. The cheese with other ingredients is then heated and stirred in a large kettle. The usual type is a steam-jacketed vat or a cooker which injects live steam directly into the cheese mass. Both vats have a mechanical stirring device. Three phases. There are three phases in the process. The first, a clear layer of fat appears. After the addition of processing salts and with the rise in temperature, this disappears again. The second is the hot mass gets crumbly, granular aspect. With a little more heat, it finally becomes smooth, velvet and glossy. That's alright. That's you get your processed cheese, but if you look at the McDonald's cheese, that's processed cheese, and that has got anything but cheese in it. In the past, heating took place at lower temperatures than today, when melting process was carried out under oppression. Minimum heat of 70 degrees, and the cheese is held at this temperature for 1 to 5 minutes. The cheese mass is then fed into a packaging machine and checks the range to ensure the composition is up to standard, is packed and labelled, and finally goes to cooling tunnel rooms. Types of processed cheese. United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization distinguishes three types. Processed cheese with the name processed Gruyere. Processed cheese, a cheese spread containing more moisture and less fat. And processed cheese products containing additions. Many countries have their own legal standards. In France, the indication of fromage fondue is reserved for processed cheese with dry matter of content at least 50%, packed content of at least 40%. Fromage pour tartin is a dry matter between 44 and 50%, i.e. contains more moisture. The terms crème de or crème de pour tartinier indicate the product is exclusive for the cheese type mentioned in the name. The United States really lays down the law of processed cheese making is strictly controlled. Pasteurized processed cheese has a moisture and fat content that should be corresponded with the statutory limits of the natural cheese from which it's made, or the average case in the blend. There are a few exceptions to the rule. Pasteurized processed cheese food. You could have cheese, or what is it? It's food. Let's label it food. It's prepared with additives like cream, milk, lean milk powder, whey powder, fruits, vegetables, and meats. A good meat in my cheese. At least 51% of the weight must be cheese. The moisture content is 44% maximum, and the fat content of dry matter is a minimum of 23%. Pasteurized processed cheese spread is somewhat lower fat content, minimum 20% in dry matter. The moisture content is higher, making it more spreadable. It contains fruits, vegetables, meats, etc. High melt cheese is something new. It's special cheese for kitchen use. It takes high temperatures without losing its flavour. It's very suitable for dishes like Welsh rarebit cheese, cranberries. Two types of high melt pasteurised processed American cheese. So high melt pasteurised processed cheese food. The first somewhat higher fat content, higher moisture content, and more pronounced cheddar flavour. Imitation. I want some of this imitation pasteurized processed cheese spread. It has a very low fat content and therefore not up to the requirements set by the cheese spread. So it's imitation. It's suitable for persons with a fat and calorie reduced diet. Pros and cons. Processed cheese can be frowned upon by cheese connoisseurs, and perhaps understandably. In the first place, processed cheese is used to be made from, referring to the end, all kinds of cheese leftovers that could not be sold because of certain defects. If at one time the processed cheese factories bought cheese of inferior quality for a low price at a higher profit, now the time is definitely over. It's clear today the market position can only be maintained with a product of the highest quality. Minor defects are acceptable since they are not detectable at the end product. In the second place, opinions about the flavour of processed cheese can strongly differ. Real cheese connoisseurs look for individual qualities and flavour and smell of natural cheese, enjoying now a soft running Camembert, then a sweet dry Emmental and nicely veined Roquefort. They abhor the uniform neutral flavour and dull consistency of processed cheese. For others, however, the processed cheese seems to be all is wanted. Fortunately, there's a cheese for everybody's taste. Just what a diplomat. Processed cheese is available practically all over the world and in most simple and most ludicrous states. A ludicrous that shapes a ludicrous processed cheese, imitation processed cheese spread food. And the packaging is often eye-catching with very vivid colours. Americans' inventiveness has shown the way. A coloured wrapping or attractive carton is no longer enough. Little dainty baskets, elegant earthenware glass pots abound. Processed cheese will go in almost anything. The consumer gets something functional and decorative In the bargain, the big advantage of processed cheese is that it keeps well, much of the natural cheese. It is practically sterile and does not ripen further, thanks to the high temperature attained in the production process. Since its invention, and around the turn of the century, it's been very popular. It is estimated that 1/3 of the United States cheese production is marketed as processed cheese. Thus ends the full reading of Urquhart's Stork. Thank you, Urquhart, and I think you'll be pleased for me to get back onto the new ciders. Thanks for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.